station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting Community Powered Radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Mike Houck about the need for Portland to adopt a climate adaptation policy. We'll go out with music by Francis Beebe. My engineer's Ray Bodwell. Thanks, Ray. And thanks for listening, and stay safe.
Tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hey, you're invited to tune into the Blues Junction Saturday, March 22nd at 5 o'clock for an all-thrills, no-frills excursion with guitarist Mary Flower. We'll spend some time exploring her musical career, play some of her recorded music, and who knows, maybe she'll play a song or three. So it's All Thrills, No Frills on the Blues Junction Saturday, March 22nd at 5 for an hour of Mary Flower.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Joshua.
Ambete washtelo, chante washte na pechu zapielo, le unkipiki he washtelo. Greetings, good day, I welcome you, my relatives. I shake your hands with a good heart. It's good for all of us to be here. This is First Voices Radio National International, and I'm Teokasin Ghost Horse. I'm sending you greetings and strength from the lands of the Munsee-speaking Lenape. First Voices Radio is an all-Native-hosted, all-Native-produced by a member of the Red Lake Ojibwe Nation, Liz Hill. For those of you who want to follow along, even look the information up as I interview our guest, Cindy Rosin, it's roamfreenation.org. Roamfreenation.org. And now Cindy Rosin joins us for an update from Roam Free Nation, which is based in St. Ignatius, Montana. Roam Free Nation's mission is to inspire responsibility and action for the earth, highlighting the last migratory buffalo of Yellowstone Country to serve their perspective and work to end their killing so they may recover and naturally restore themselves on the land that are their birthright. Their allies who are working on in defense of all others, including prairie dogs, grizzly bears, wolves, land, water, and indigenous justice. Our guest, Cindy Rosin, is an artist, activist from New York City. Cindy teaches children in the summers and works odd jobs throughout the year to enable her to spend time volunteering for the earth and her inhabitants. She lives on a houseboat in Rockaway, Queens, and spends her time there in the company of the fish, seabirds, turtles, jellyfish, and other creatures of the Jamaica Bay estuary. Cindy has had the honor of standing with the buffalo for 19 seasons in the field and is dedicated to fighting for a future where they take back their lands on their own terms. I'd like to welcome you. There's a lot happening in Gardner and Yellowstone. Yellowstone goes into Montana and into Wyoming. Names don't really mean that much, but just to locate, it's in near Gardner. The managing has been pretty much mismanaged all the years that I've heard this, and a lot of people are falling prey to the propaganda, as well as the buffalo falling prey to the captured facilities in huge numbers, by the way. I'd like to welcome you. I'm honored because you protect the buffalo and are trying to bring the truth out. And thank you for being here on First Voices Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, your last update this past Tuesday said there was a group of 37 wild buffalo that were captured. But a lot of people, even though I know, we know, and some people in the know about, you know, why the buffalo, the bison were and being taken since that time in 1995 until now, where thousands and thousands of bison have been slaughtered, captured, or just shot and done away with. And I think we could start with that kind of background.
Yes, it's really hard for people outside of this issue to imagine. You never, and certainly I'm from New York, you never imagine that the national parks system is on the wrong side, like the completely wrong side of a wildlife issue. And yet here we are, I'm in Gardner, Montana, on the northern end of Yellowstone National Park. And within the park boundaries is the Stevens Creek Capture Facility, where they capture wild bison as they're trying to leave the park and keep them entrapped there. And on the day of that update, we had watched specifically a small group be captured, but they, since I've been here for a week now, they've actually captured over 300, some say close to 400 buffalo inside that trap. And they do this for two reasons. The reason that I've witnessed so far is that they are shipping them to slaughterhouses. Just because Montana does not want wild buffalo, they have entered into a deal with Yellowstone and other agencies called the Interagency Bison Management Plan. And for that reason, Yellowstone has agreed to keep the buffalo population at an absurdly low number, between about 3,000 and 6,000 buffalo. And so they are trying to meet their target kill number for this year by trapping buffalo and sending them to slaughter. So far there's been 3 days of shipments of two stock trailers each going up to a slaughterhouse in Helena. And these operations are actually done by the Confederate Salish and Kootenai tribes. And that's because many years ago, there was a challenge to the state of Montana actually taking possession of the buffalo and slaughtering them. So they got around it by having the tribes do it. But it's Yellowstone capturing with the aid of their partners, which include Montana Department of Livestock, the animal APHIS, the Animal Plant Health. APHIS, which is a federal department in charge with animal and plant health, basically. And then the U.S. Forest Service as well.
And you mentioned there has to be a reason why people coming to Hays or basically talking about the tribes. That's fairly recently and new, is to before they just basically did not negotiate with tribes or anything like that. But now it's like another reason or actually the excuse. And some of the tribes been caught up in the longing for the treaties to be upheld, actually. And so they fall into that. But meanwhile, the bison and the way they're working with them is anti-native. This is my opinion that a lot of natives have to think about. They have to think about, this is who we are, is that what's happening to the buffalo, is we were driven to almost extinctions over 100 years ago. And this is what is happening to the bison. But a lot of us forget that history and we go along with whatever we can survive with and for, given to us by the government. But now here's the other thing is one of the reasons why is something that happened way back then, the misinformation about disease. Would you tell us about that?
Absolutely. So the reasoning, the official reasoning given behind these decades of bison mismanagement has been the brucellosis, which is a cattle disease that cattle brought to the wildlife of this ecosystem. And that now many wild bison have, especially in this ecosystem. The problem with that argument is that there has never been a documented case of wild bison transmitting the disease to cattle. Here, the bison population got the disease from cattle in the first place, and they've never in the wild once given it back, whereas most of the livestock outbreaks of brucellosis in the area have been traced back to elk populations. You're not trying to haze elk into a capture facility and shipping them to slaughterhouses. Obviously, there's a hunt, but there's not the same kind of, you don't have a line of people standing at the boundary of Yellowstone slaughtering elk when they come out. And that's because the brucellosis story is a myth. It's a fabrication from the livestock industry to get rid of wild grazers. And they don't want wild buffalo on their land, quote unquote. You have public grazing allotments that are extremely valuable to the livestock industry, and they don't want the competition. I also think that there is a sense that buffalo represent what is wild, what is native, what is indigenous to this landscape. And there's a lot of people in power who would like to see all of that go away.
That is some thought to it. Also, you said something about they want the grazing lands, public lands, to graze their cattle so that we can eat more beef and more McDonald's, basically. The other thing is, are the elk in competition with the same grasses as the cattle?
The elk don't graze in the same way. Then they don't use the same volume of resources. And they don't move across the landscape in the same way either. But I think a lot of it is that elk hunting is a giant industry. Not as big as the livestock industry, but it's a giant industry. So you couldn't do something that would wipe out elk on public lands outside of Yellowstone, because that industry would rage and riot.
That industry happens to be strong ranches in Wyoming and in Montana. And I think that this window that this hazing and capturing is small, but the braggadocio that hunters seem to have when they come in to hunt buffalo, elk, and other wildlife is that seems to be more of a sport rather than a sustenance. So this is the trick, is that Native people are coming in demanding their rights, treaty rights, that they would be provided with food if they gave up the land. So they gave up the land. Now they're practically being used to say that, okay, this is part of our treaty rights, and now you shouldn't bother us. But that's not true, because there's something that went down. I never could figure it out. And I'm not saying there is, but it seems very, why would tribes all of a sudden agree to taking buffalo? Because it's part of their tradition, which is true, but it's been coerced. And a lot of people do not know that. As long as they receive buffalo, one or two a head or 20 a head on their own lands, on a reservation, then it's happy. They're happy. But yet, the sad case is that a lot of people going to the bison to take pictures. I'm wondering, do they hear the story that you're telling?
It's an uphill battle. I mean, the bison issue here on the tribes have been kind of used, in my opinion, on every level, in that you have people coming to exercise treaty rights outside the park, but the way it's done is directly at the park border, wiping out basically any buffalo that dares cross that imaginary line. So it's not done in a way that you could even call it hunting. It's not done in a way that's respectful to the buffalo or to the hunters. Nobody wants that. But on the same level, you have the capture and slaughter operations. Those buffalo, the meat from those buffalo that get slaughtered in slaughterhouses as if they were livestock, is also going to tribes. Then you have the Bison Conservation Transfer Program, which is their new greenwash name for quarantine, basically a time of intensive imprisonment and invasive testing and management, after which they will get shipped to tribal lands to be behind fences. And so on all levels, you have the federal agencies, the state agencies that want to save face in doing what they in doing things that most of the public would find abhorrent, in turning bison into livestock, or letting them be gunned down at the border, or sending them to slaughterhouses. But you put a face on that of the tribes, and that makes it more difficult to criticize. You have this quarantine program now that's supported by all these big environmental groups, because they say, look, now we can get more buffalo on tribal lands, which would be great if we let the buffalo migrate there, if they walk there themselves, but not if they're rounded up and kept in prison for 3 years and then eventually sent to be livestock. So as far as the visitors to Yellowstone, I don't know. I think our PR machine is not as efficient as theirs, because when you talk to people, people might find it horrible, but they buy into the idea that there's too many bison in the park. It's like one person gets stuck in a traffic jam for 10 minutes because of a herd of bison on the road, and they think, oh, there's too many, I guess we better kill them. It's short-sighted. You know, there's people who come out here to visit who love this wildlife and love this land, but there's a lot of people who love convenience and human, you know, the supreme right of humans to do whatever they want more.
Yeah, it seems to be addiction is convenience. Convenience is an addiction. Americans have that. We all do. And I'm thinking, Cynthia, you spent almost 20 years going back and forth. Has there been any change in policy? Anything you see the different in different behavior in the bison, or something, you know, that that indicates there is going to be change, or there has been changed? And to me, not the government seems has not changed. They put out a good word that they're protecting the bison with these other organizations, and I won't name it, but they've allowed and they've basically compromised their original purpose. And Rome Free Nation is that original purpose and still staying with its mission, basically, to restore, let themselves restore the land, actually let Mother Earth save us rather than us trying to save Earth. I think it's a different mind philosophy. So you've spent that much time out there. Has there been a difference that you see?
I think on the mismanagement level, there's been some differences, but it just seems so minor. When I was first coming out, there was intensive spring hazing operations where livestock agents, park officials, national forest rangers would get on horseback and chase any buffalo in Montana back into the park. And that largely ended with the development of some very small, but some tolerance zones for wild bison outside of Yellowstone. There's some on the west side along in West Yellowstone, along that area, and there's some up here on the northern end of the park. But they're few and far between, and they're also at risk with the current Montana government threatening to take them away. But even still, they're not even used because they're not allowed to migrate even to the boundaries of those tolerance zones. So the policy is different, but the overall effect is the same. And I guess the other thing of difference I've seen is just there are so many fewer buffalo coming out of the park. As a general rule, I mean, there's years when it is different. To 2023 here was an absolute bloodbath because for some reason that year, thousands of buffalo came out of the park on this north side, and it was a massacre. It was devastating. But really, they're not using as much of the landscape as when I was first coming out, and they're not using it in the same numbers. So yes, there's some tolerance zones where bison are allowed in the state of Montana, but it's few and far between compared to what I used to see. I think that by killing the first buffalo that migrate outside of these imaginary Yellowstone boundaries and killing them year after year, you're killing that migratory memory. And these herds are not using the land in the same way that they used to. And if we'd get out of the way, they'd start using the land again. Maybe they'd take different routes. Maybe they'd have different migration patterns. But you can be sure they'd figure it out if we got out of the way. But right now we're in the way, and we're in the way in every possible way.
And as far back as I remember, from Clinton to Bush to Obama to Trump to Biden and again Trump, the policies too, is that we underestimate what the government is truly doing by guising it as we're the good guys. And yet the land, and it's really interesting to note that there's less buffalo coming out. There's less of a lot of things happening. I mean, even out here in New York, as you know, there's less birds, there's less wildlife. The more we occupy as humans, the less of wildlife there is. And that's philosophy for some people, a sentimentality. But to me, that is the reality of it. And some people say we need to live in reality, but there's nothing going to be done about that if we If we get rid of Earth, we get rid of the beings, the beasts that are meant to be here and have survived many millennia before we ever came. This seems to be the mainstay, that this is how it is, and nothing's going to upset natural law, even if there's one or two bison left. But for us as humans, we've lost relationship with Earth and her natural processes, her natural law, and we put far too many policies in place. Your thoughts? That's a lot of opinion, but yet it's based on my experience and the truth that I know. Your thoughts, Cindy?
It's so true. It's we as humans, we are so disconnected from the natural world, and at the same time, we feel like as a culture, as a civilization, that we're so well informed now because of the internet, because we have 24/7 access to news and opinions and screens and all of it. And yet we're so uninformed when it comes to connection with the natural world. And I think it's because we're that disconnected that these greenwashing so-called solutions presented by the government just reel people in. The only way you could ever think that corralling buffalo in livestock trailers and then shipping them on the highways to a different home is okay is if you've never been out here standing with the buffalo, and if you've never felt what it is to be free in yourself, then how can you value that for another animal? So when people say, oh yeah, quarantine, that's great, at least they're not killing them anymore, it's like, I don't know, do we get to decide for someone else if life in prison is better than death?
We're joined by Cindy Rosin, an update from Rome Free Nation, based in St. Ignatius, Montana, talking about responsibility of, as humans, you know, we owe to nature, because nature has been responsible to us. Cindy, the whole idea of Rome Free Nation, are we asking, or are you asking for more people to volunteer, such as yourself, to really look inside, to come out and maybe help volunteer, get used to the land? And you have to experience what you have experienced. You know, I grew up this way, and I know what you're talking about, that the land has a lot of relationship with what she keeps and wants alive. Of course, she wants humans to be alive, but I think we've really lost track of our purpose, and that's evident by killing other species too much. We've been greedy with our own intelligence, so to speak, which is not really intelligent. If you come from a beautiful culture, why do you have to destroy beautiful cultures? Not just human, but bison have a culture. That's what people do to the beings or beasts, saying they're non-human, so they don't have culture. They do not have intelligence. Give us your thoughts about that.
It really is true, and you see it when you spend time with another culture, that they have their life ways and their past that are not all that different from our natural ones. And buffalo, they have relationships and social groups and rituals and traditions, and so many humans can't see that or can't value that. And I would encourage people to get out into natural spaces, to get away from their screens, to really learn about this world around us, so we can better be able to advocate for the natural world.
From time to time, First Voices Radio reaches out to the people involved with helping us to understand, as the bison themselves, they don't have to understand us because we speak for ourselves. And that if they were a human race, if they were another culture, they would not have great opinion about us. But it is so that their innocence says, just keep doing what we were created to be. Rome Free Nation is bringing that out. Beasts and beings really do have intelligence and are responsible. And so thank you for being here. Any last thoughts that you have, Cindy Rosen?
I'd encourage people to take a look. We're at roamfeenation.org. We're putting out updates whenever we're in the field, and then other updates of things going on with this issue. And yeah, we want to have people see things from the buffalo's perspective. We want to amplify that perspective, and we will not compromise. We will keep putting the buffalo first.
One more thing is, in the East Coast, as you know, a lot of people do not relate. They do not connect to those spaces that you talk about. And so we don't think it's about us here in this urbanized East Coast. We don't think that's going to touch us. We don't need to worry about that. Let them worry about that. As long as we get sustenance and resource from that which we don't know. And there is a gap of sort of premeditated ignorance that is put in place, this wall that's there of ignorance. And part of that is, of course, bringing more knowledge, information, but actually people on the ground with you. And I think that's encourageable. I'm asking you if people would want to come out there, and what would they expect? Last question.
I think we could provide guidance on what to see and how to see the issues in this landscape. We are a fairly new nonprofit. Right now, we don't have the ability to host volunteers. We don't have a home base or anything like that. Maybe someday we can hope. But yeah, absolutely. Get in touch. If anyone just happens to be coming to this area, get in touch, and we can talk you through some of the things that the park tries to keep hidden that we think people need to see.
Okay. That would be roamfreenation.org. And under that, there's contact information you can get hold of and talk to Cindy Rosen, any of the other organizers. And thank you for being here, Cindy. We'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was good speaking with you.
First Voices Radio will be returning to you in a few minutes. I'm Teal'c'c'n Ghost Horse. Thanks for returning to First Voices Radio. My name is Teal'c'c'n Ghost Horse. I'm going to do something here. Do my best in Lakota. So what I'm trying to say is, do not be afraid to relearn, learn, and keep learning your language, an indigenous language, because it's going to be needed now. Don't be afraid, because the more you speak your language, you mispronounce it. Maybe it has a different meaning. Keep going. The correct pronunciation will come. And less afraid, less fear you will have. The strength to get through comes through with your language. And Mother Earth will need you. Mother Earth will need this Earth language to communicate what she's feeling to those without empathy, if they can really understand what compassion's about. So it'll bring about a consciousness. So I'm going to do what I can here, and then we're going to move. Hechituwelo. Ho wakantaka namakho ambetula e ni owazio plakinktilo. Taka taku wo waktani onili oplakinktilo. Hoyata wichani ktilo. Ukuchilo ontaya amaplezeyo. Miwaka pataha wayang namajio. Wichayaka echeki ontaya. Ho anamahopta ye. Le mitaku ye yankapiki optaya toka iwachish nya unktelo. Hechachaki tokata. Oina jiwa oya glepiki ikta. Aunta nipikta nue. O hechituelo mitakoi oyasi. Hear me, Grand Mystery. Today I'm going to tell your word, speak your word. But without fear and shame, I will speak. The people shall live. See me, for I am humble. From above, watch over. You are always the truth. Listen to me. My friends and relatives, hear, and I shall be at peace. May our voices be heard at the future goal you have prepared for us. O mitakoye yankapiki, mitakoye oyasi.
Congratulations.
Makataha Richa Makataha Richasha Wan Richoha Wan Awahiya Takahena Oshimala Yo Duwa Wakantaha Wakantaha in Itaja Hechena. So being a man from earth that I am, I've sung concerning an event for which I ask for compassion wherever, whoever from above, you are the grand mystery, Tejituelo. So it is, and it is so. And that's Exodus, Bob Marley and the Wailers, 1977, off the album Exodus.
You got a wicked system, yeah. Mr. Babylon, you've got a wicked system, yeah. Mr. Babylon,
Mr. Babylon.
Wicked System by Fundamental Sound. And now? That's Winston McNuff with Garden of Love. So this next thought here is my personal view from the shore, which is much different than view from the ships that came and are still coming. Regardless, the view from the shore with many indigenous peoples is still to the same. So think about that view from the shore, a view from the ships, very different worldview. Very different dimensional view. You know, sitting outside earlier today, springtime here in the Northeast, and it's nearly 65 degrees. And thinking springtime yet has the chill in it. So it's been mid-seasons between spring and winter. And that's a season. If you really look at it, you can see how it transitions into spring from winter. And I think this is part of what we talk about, at least what I talk about, is how much observation, how much we've lost when we say connected to earth, connected to nature, because that does not mean going to Yellowstone or going to a park. This is coming from nature. You're living in nature with nature, which is almost impossible these days, even for indigenous folks who have been taken away, their lands, their languages, but it's going to be needed again soon. And we forget about the relationship we have, not had, because it's becoming that we had culture, we had a relationship. Now we're looking for a connection again, but we're only looking through human eyes to human eyes, our look at our perspective of nature. So if you understand coming from nature rather than the mind of humans, then you understand why nature has consciousness always, always takes care, holds us, how Mother Earth has always relationship with us and is always there at the ready. And if you're at the ready to be prepared to understand nature the way she understands us, there should not be any problem with this transition. These upcoming days here, a lot of teachings from Native peoples, because we've been through it before. So those of you who are having a hard time waiting for the suffering, or you're going to have a hard time, is because you haven't had a hard time. You've been entitled, you've been privileged, you've been given that which is a better way, but yet it separated us from nature, from Mother Earth. And without trying to genderize male or female, which unfortunately I have to speak this way in English, this foreign way of perspective, so that you can understand it. Doesn't matter where you're from. You could be from any continent. You come here, and the official language of this nation, not the land, not the country, is English. How farce is that? It's a farce. And for people to be thinking that they are supreme to indigenous peoples is proven that is an inferior way to look at themselves as other peoples, because it starts a disconnection from nature to think that nature is far below those peoples who think that they are supreme. They do not take responsibility for that plane in the sky that's leaving chemtrails, or the pollution, or the too many technologies that supposedly is making life better here on Earth. It hasn't even made life better in other planets, because we haven't been there. So how do we know it's going to make life better? So this is just a little thought here, you know, just to think differently without using some big pseudo unnatural scientific way, without feeling, without spirit, and only use reason and logic with non-empathy. So I give you this. Thanks for joining us again. Doksha Ake Wachyang Telo. My name is Teokas and Ghost Horse, and you're listening to First Voices Radio. And we'll go out with Osibisa, Sunshine Day. Doksha.
listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned. KBOO.